This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me today as we have a playoff matchup coming up against those dirty San Francisco 49ers, I got Oscar Aparicio at Better Rivals out on Twitter. Yes, we've had him on the show before, and he is back now. Not hosting the podcast Better Rivals anymore, but we've got him back talking San Francisco 49ers because, Oscar, I don't know if there's another 49ers fan that I'd really even care to talk to.
At this rate, this is probably like 8 years or maybe 7 years, I think, that we've had some kind of podcast crossover since, you know, we go way back. So it's only fitting that in a year where, you know, you're looking up to Big Brother, you have me back on the pod just to rekindle old family ties.
Yeah. Could it have even been longer? Because I want to say that we did a show right before the NFC Championship game in 2013. I think
that
might
surprise me. I mean, that would have been pretty early on in our pod's life. And so, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, like effectively almost 10 calendar years,
right?
And a whole lot of football. So, yeah, we've always had fantastic chats about the teams and always had a friendly rivalry. So, you know what? Here we are again. Time is a flat circle. It's the Seahawks and the Niners in the playoffs. And let's go.
Yeah, not the NFC Championship game, which would have been fun, but the first round of the playoffs. Thanks to the fact we have the expanded playoff field, there's now seven teams in the playoffs. The Seahawks squeak in thanks to a win by the Green Bay Packers. I'm curious to know, who were you rooting for in that Sunday night game? Because I know that the Packers have a history of kind of getting destroyed by the 49ers. Were you into that matchup, or were you kind of hoping for a third matchup between Seattle and the Niners?
You know, I'll be honest. I wasn't too wild about facing a Hall of Fame quarterback with a defense and special teams that seemed to have found itself a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, their performance against Detroit would lead me to believe I shouldn't have worried too much, especially given the fact that Rodgers would have been going for his fifth straight playoff defeat against the 49ers. So I wasn't honestly too worried. Like, I mean, I didn't want that matchup, but if you get the Packers, you get the Packers. I honestly, of the teams that we were on slate to play, the Lions were the ones that I didn't want the most, just because they can throw up seemingly 35 points on anyone.
Yeah.
That's just one of those things that I could totally see going sideways. And while the Niners can't score points, it's still, you know, Brock Purdy is still feeling himself and getting into the role, and you never know what that's going to be, you know, kind of in a playoff atmosphere. So I was like, you know what? Maybe let's not go against a team that can like seemingly put up 35 points against everyone. But Seattle, Green Bay, like, we know them. We're familiar. We know what's coming, even if there's a schematic wrinkle here or there. And so those were matchups that I wasn't too, like, I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Well, you had a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers that you could have potentially faced, but instead you fall back on, I don't know, the potential All-Pro quarterback or the number one quarterback who was voted into the Pro Bowl this season, and Geno Smith. And I have to imagine, you know, Geno Smith's on everybody's radar this year.
Yeah, you know, Geno Smith really, you know, he hit the NFL like a right cross to the jaw, you could say. You know, it would really hurt. Maybe drop your breaker jaw, even, maybe.
That's a reference that the kids probably don't get, because that was, I don't know, 8 to 10 years ago, Oscar.
Do people not remember or know that Geno Smith got punched in the mouth when he was a Jet, and that basically torpedoed his career for some number of years because he never got his starting job back?
Right, yeah.
That's like, I feel like that's known football knowledge.
But it's old football knowledge. I can tell. See, you've been doing this a long time.
Wow. I come back with gray hairs in my beard and they're just calling me old. The slander must stop.
I know, but it's... Yeah, I only get to make this happen every so often, and I'm not super excited about this matchup, although I think of the different matchups, I am a little bit excited about this because, you know, there's the old saying that it's really difficult to beat a team three times in one season. Are you buying into this at all?
I think there's something to that, but I also think that I think the games against the Rams last year, that's what everyone talks about. Man, they lost against the Rams in the NFC Championship game, but the Rams were always kind of a tough play for the Niners in that, you know, they had a lot of things the Niners weren't necessarily great at stopping, chief among them Aaron Donald,
right?
Or Jalen Ramsey, you know, something like that, that what was really, really tough for the Niners to handle. I think when you look at the two games that we've played against Seattle thus far, I mean, it's been a struggle for the Seattle offense to really put up too many points. I think y'all scored 7 points in the first matchup, and I think that not a whole heck of a lot happened in that second matchup offensively that would really worry you, right? So you think to yourself, all right, the Niners, I don't know if they're going to have Mooney Ward track DK Metcalf like they did in the last game, but that is the thing that you worry about. You worry about DK Metcalf going off, and now with Charvarius Ward being able to play well against DK and the offensive line not being stellar, it's an offense that kind of plays into what the Niners want to do and can do to shut a team down, which is exactly why I think the Seahawks haven't had really good offensive performances against the 49ers in the two times they faced them. So, you know, the matchup makes the fight here, and the Seahawks deficiencies are ones where if you're a 49ers fan, you're thinking, all right, you can work with that. You can play with that. This is within your wheelhouse.
But history's on our side, Oscar. Pete Carroll has not lost to the 49ers in the playoffs in his career. And I have to think that part of him gets up for these games against his former teams. He doesn't have a whole lot of losses against the Niners, doesn't have a lot against the Jets either, or against the Vikings. For some reason, Pete Carroll really likes to play some of his former teams. And with the Niners, I don't know if he can overcome, obviously, a great defense by the Niners, one of the tops in the league in so many different categories. It is going to be tough on the offense, but I just have this... there's a couple things throughout Seahawks history that I have to lean on as a Seahawks fan. It's Pete Carroll and his history against the Niners. Two, it's Pete Carroll and his history being an underdog in the playoffs, for instance, when the New Orleans Saints came to Seattle as the heavy favorites, as the former Super Bowl champs, and then they get beat by a Beastquake in Seattle.
You know, I know that it is difficult to think about the history of the Seahawks franchise, given that the 7 years in which you've been a franchise is so long. To think about the depths of franchise richness that you have with Pete Carroll. But, you know, you've got a Shanahan coach that also has a rich history, too. A rich history in which he was just in the playoffs and managed to get to the NFC Championship game. And despite the fact that his coaches have been drained, you still have a number one overall weighted DVOA team. You still have a top 10 offense, even with a third string quarterback. You still have, I think if you're talking about coaching battles, I know Pete Carroll is probably going to pull a rabbit out of his head or something like that. But I think if you're talking about coaching battles, the 49ers have a pretty good coaching staff. DeMeco Ryans does a great job. Kyle Shanahan is an offensive play caller. You know, I think that it's going to be an interesting matchup, but it's one that should still tilt towards the 49ers, even if Pete Carroll tries to pull some magic out of that wad of gum that he's been chewing on since 1912.
It has been a strong run for the Niners. I can't dispute that at all, because you have to go all the way back to October since their last loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, a team that, you know, it could be a potential Super Bowl preview if you look back to that game with the way things are going with both those squads. You got another win, you go into the bye week, and then rattle off 9 more wins after the bye week. So 10 in a row for the Niners. Over that stretch, do you see any points that would be potential weaknesses or concerns now going into this stretch run in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think the concerns are that Brock Purdy hasn't had to really play in too much adversity. Like, yes, he had to go to Seattle and win, but, you know, they didn't really trail too much in that game. And Seattle kind of got close there at the end, but it wasn't the typical Seattle BS that Niner fans are used to with Russell Wilson. It still felt relatively comfortable, even though the score got a little close there and it was within one score late. You know, so you think about Brock Purdy having a turnover-worthy play rate that is higher than the actual number of interceptions that he's had. So you look at his turnover-worthy play rate, and it's actually about 3.5%. Jimmy Garoppolo's is 2.6. That means that, like, you know, he's probably in, like, the bottom third of NFL, maybe like in the middle of the pack in NFL quarterbacks, but he does sometimes put the ball in harm's way. And if the Seahawks can capitalize, then that might start to flip things. Yeah. Once you start winning the turnover battle, that might start to flip things. It puts the defense in a tough position, you know, and that I think could be an interesting component. I also think that the Niners, because of the way the Seattle offense is built, you can't let them get going on the ground too much. And you do have a really explosive running back that is good and good in space. So I think the Niners have done a good job of bottling up the Seahawks running game over the last two meetings. But if for some reason they pop off a couple of big runs, it's supposed to rain a little bit during the game. That might affect things a little bit. Like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like if the edges begin to creep in, then maybe you can see some of the wheels start to fall off. Right. But this is a team that has that you think that's going to happen. And ultimately, it never does. For 10 straight weeks, it hasn't. Whether, you know, they got punched in the mouth because they've had an injury, or whether they've started off slow, or whether you have a Raiders and Jarrett Stidham who are just going to just throw everything out and have a flea flicker on, you know, the second or third play of the game. The Niners take the best shot and they keep coming back and they keep scoring touchdowns and they keep winning. So I do think that despite, you know, those are probably the things I would pick at. The other thing too is D'Amato Lenore. That's why I think Mooney's probably going to shadow DK Metcalf, because the Niners coverage, you know where they're going to line up. It's not a secret. They're not going to disguise things too much. Mm-hmm. So there are ways to get DK Metcalf on D'Amato Lenore and just say, DK Metcalf, go moss this guy. Like he's been mossed a couple weeks in a row now. And really Lenore at the catch point is not super great. He's able to stay in phase. He's good in coverage, but it's just that catch point specifically where he seems to struggle. And DK Metcalf is a big dude and he can go up and get that football. So that's, if I'm the Seahawks, the matchup I'm trying to isolate. If you're the 49ers, you can get rid of that entirely just by having Mooney Ward follow DK Metcalf. And so, you know, there's an answer for the things that I think you might be worried about if you're the Niners.
Right. With Brock Purdy, is there any concern that, and I know you pointed to some of the turnover percentage and then throw percentage, and that you really can't simulate the type of atmosphere this is going to be with it being the first round of the playoffs. Or can you? Can you look back throughout the last 10 wins and say, you know, Brock Purdy in prime time or Brock Purdy against a big opponent? I know you pointed to Seattle a little bit in that kind of atmosphere, but is there anything that you can point to that is really quite like what we're going to see on Saturday?
Yeah, I think the fact that it's at home is probably the good part, right? And so I think in that regard, you can simulate some of that. I do think the game against Seattle was a big deal, playing in that atmosphere, especially because it was at that point really the division on the line. The Seahawks had to win that game, and so it was more of a must-win scenario. And the last 2 weeks, there's a reason that Shanahan kept playing the starters, and that's because the number two seed was in sight. A couple weeks ago, the Niners were the three seed, but they knew that if they kept winning, even if they ended up tied with the Vikings, they would get that two seed and get assured two home playoff games if they got past their first one at least. So I think that Shanahan has manufactured some of that pressure. But I also think that Brock Purdy, like this is the benefit of drafting a quarterback that's had meaningful starts in college, is that he's played in big games in college.
Sure.
I mean, he's had to play against Texas, at Texas, at home, you know, with like college football.
I don't think of that as a big game, but go on.
Yeah, well, the Texas thing right over here is going to tell you, as someone who's in Austin, Texas, and who's been in
big, I don't have my Texas Sooner flag over my shoulder either, so I know we have this.
We were destined to be on opposing sides. You know, I think this is a rough year for you too, man. 49-0 in the Cotton Bowl.
I actually didn't watch.
It's probably better for you, honestly, because the Sooners got blown out 49-0.
I prefer watching teams that play defense, and I know the Sooners don't, and so I've been kind of tuning them out.
So yes, I do think that Brock Purdy has some experience in big games. Now, I do think that this is absolutely going to be a unique experience or a playoff game. It'll be his first playoff game. I don't think that you can just wash that away. But the one thing that you can say about Brock Purdy is that over the course of his run as the starting quarterback, he's risen to the occasion. I don't know why this is necessarily going to be any different.
You know, one thing I really appreciate about this rivalry is that how the 49ers and their franchise can have this foresight of knowing that even when Russell Wilson gets traded, that when you play the Broncos, that losing to him somehow makes our draft pick situation worse in the future. And so we could have had the number three pick, but because of that Broncos win over the Niners, it kind of fouled up our whole draft plans.
Let me tell you, that was a rough week for Niners fans. It was like that meme of like, you weren't sure which button to push and you were the superhero sweating. Cause it was like beat Russell Wilson, but also like, don't want to give the Seattle Seahawks a better draft pick. Like, oh, which button do I push? It was fraught. I'm not going to lie. It was very, very divisive. But you know, we ended up the only solace we can take in losing to a terrible Broncos team and a loss that likely kept us out of the number
first
one
overall
seed.
Pick, right? Or the first exactly. overall seed. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I do think if I were to do it over again and I could wave a magic wand and both beat Russell Wilson and get the number one seed, I think that's the move.
In hindsight, but, I suppose, but at the time you had a choice to make and you made your choice.
Yeah, Russell Wilson's always, he's always going to have a little bit of that, you know, Russell Wilson BS that Niner fans are used to. And so it didn't surprise at the same time that it hurt.
How has it been for you watching what's happened in Denver? Because obviously we have a rooting interest as Seahawks fans, which it's hard in a way because he's your quarterback for so long. But at the same time, you benefit by him not being as good. So I suppose if there was a way for him to play very well, but also have his team lose, that maybe would have been the ideal thing. But yeah, how's it been for you as a former rival, but also someone who has seen a lot of Russell Wilson over the years? What was this season like for you watching?
Hilarious. I mean, other than like losing to them, which was really annoying.
Yeah, not hilarious, but.
The whole like Denver let's ride thing. I mean, he is a caricature of himself and it's kind of hilarious to watch it. And you hear some of the stories coming out from the Seattle media and you hear a little bit of former players kind of like taking issue with him and in general. And you think, wow, like I've always thought that he was a phenomenal quarterback and a talented quarterback and one that, you know, was in the top couple of tiers of quarterbacking. And I thought, man, Pete Carroll's getting rid of that guy. Like, I don't know about that. And you look at him as like the character that he's become in Denver, and you're like, I get it, I get why they were okay, I get what they saw that they were like, maybe we'll just roll with Geno Smith, you know. So I think it was unfortunate because I think Nathaniel Hackett is probably a good coach, but he was just put in a bad marriage where he's a green offensive play caller. And he's been handed this quarterback who feels like he should have all this say in offensive play calling and doing things his way. And it just the offensive system didn't match what Russ did well. He tried to make him a pocket passer in that more Shanahan system with the in-breaking dig routes and some of that stuff. And Russell Wilson is like a chaos quarterback. He needs to basically like not see his first read, roll out, see someone on a scramble drill streaking down the field, and just moonball that thing right into the bucket.
Yeah.
He needs a lot more slot fades. He needs to, you know, he needs to do those kinds of things. And I think that Hackett's system was just like trying to force him into this box that he wasn't. And then you just see that tension boil over and he couldn't manage the personality and you just have absolute disaster.
Right.
It just kind of goes to show you. I honestly think Pete Carroll was the person who came out looking the best out of this whole scenario because the fact that Pete Carroll was able to manage him as a personality for so long, I think is a testament to the coaching the coach that Pete Carroll is.
Yeah.
And now that, you know, he's off the team, he's like, you can go flame out somewhere else.
Well, I do hope that he can rebound just as a fan of Russell Wilson, but obviously, you know, as a fan of a top five draft pick, it's been okay too. Going back to the Niners, I kind of want to look ahead to the offseason. And I know you're looking forward to this, this playoff time period.
Already chalking up the loss, man. You're already like, yeah, you know, we're going to lose the game. Got to head straight to the offseason. Just clean out the locker.
So once the Niners lose on Saturday, what are they going to do at quarterback with Trey Lance and Brock Purdy? Where do you see that going forward this offseason?
You know, it's a good question. And it's a question that I think is a little dependent on how the playoffs go. If Seattle ends up upsetting the Niners and Brock has two picks and looks a little flustered and can't handle, you know, kind of some of the, if Seattle gives him any pre-snap adjustments, you know, then I think you start to think to yourself, okay, like this is a good run, but like, you know, there's a reason we drafted Trey Lance. If the Niners go on a deep run and Brock Purdy continues this, you know, kind of 2 to 3 touchdown a game, you know, magic and over 100 quarterback rating, and his PFF grade is actually pretty good on the season. It's now surpassed Jimmy Garoppolo, actually. His passing grade from PFF is at 74.2, whereas Jimmy's was just a shade under that at 69.5.
And
it really is fitting that Jimmy Garoppolo's PFF grade is at 69. I'm just going to go ahead and say that out loud. You know, and so I do think if that continues, then you are in a quarterback competition scenario. I do think that recency bias has made us forget the talent that Trey Lance brought to the table, the whip of an arm that he has, the size that he has, the person that he is. And I do think that there's a reason he was drafted third overall. And it's not like the Niners necessarily reached. Everyone knew he didn't have experience and he needed time, but he had talent to go that high in the draft. And you compare that to Brock, and it's one of those things where it's like, I could see it there being a quarterback competition, but having two quarterbacks on a rookie deal is not bad. You got to pay Nick Bosa. You've got people to pay. You've got salaries that are ballooning next year because of the contracts of Eric Armstead, George Kittle, Trent Williams. So it's great. I mean, you've got a quarterback room set for at least 2-3 years, you know, figure out who the best quarterback is and forgive me for saying it. Let's ride.
Do you think it's over with Garoppolo then? They don't make a decision to where it's one of the young guys in Garoppolo? You think it'll be Purdy and Trey?
Brock Purdy is a more athletic Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Like you look at their numbers and they're almost identical. Like you look at their average depth of target and it's like 7 yards for Brock Purdy versus 7.3 yards for Jimmy Garoppolo. Like their adjusted completion percentage is 77% for Brock Purdy, 75% for Jimmy Garoppolo. Like everything, you go down the line, even their like pressure to sack rate, 18% for Brock Purdy, 18.8% for Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Like they are, they're strikingly similar in terms of their production and their output. And then the important numbers, you look at EPA per play, which is a measure of the offense overall, but still, how are you kind of captaining Kyle Shanahan's offense? And they're both about the same. Brock Purdy's a little worse than Jimmy Garoppolo, but not by a meaningful amount. And that's starting to change now that he's been in the offense a little bit longer. So I think you've got a cheaper version of him. You've got a more athletic version of Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy because he does give you a little bit more with his legs. And so it's like, yeah, why pay money for Jimmy Garoppolo? Get that compensatory pick, baby, and let him go to New York or you know wherever he's going to go and just ride that Purdy lightning.
There was one thing that bothered me about the last matchup in particular between the Seahawks and 49ers. It's that I don't know if this was just part of the strategy of Pete Carroll, maybe thinking that the moment was going to be difficult for Purdy being in Lumen Field, almost called it CenturyLink, at Lumen Field. They only blitzed him 2 times the entire game. And I have to think that, and in those two blitzes, they were very successful. They made him inaccurate. I don't think he completed either attempt when he was blitzed. It was only twice, so it's a small sample size. But I have to think that that's got to change in this matchup on Saturday.
You know, I think he was probably scared, if anything, by the game against, and scared is a strong term, but he probably watched some of that Miami tape.
Yeah.
And what the blitz does is it makes the quarterback's read really defined and really quick.
Yeah.
And
when you have Debo Samuel and George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey,
what's Brock Purdy going to do? He's going to throw to his hot. He's going to know where to go with the ball. He's like, oh, they're blitzing. Cool. I'm going to get it out quick to one of my playmakers. And it's going to be one-on-one on the edge, or it's going to be a quick glance route or something like that. You make the game more defined for a quarterback when you don't make him go through his reads. So if anything, what Pete Carroll is probably thinking is, okay, Brock Purdy, I saw that you were getting the ball out quick against Miami. You were able to beat their blitzes and you obviously know where to go with the ball. Let me see if you can beat me with your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a fair, you know, like first you're looking at a 7-round draft pick, you know, like that. I feel like that's a fair call.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the problem was that he was also able to do that too. And so I do think that it wasn't necessarily like a bad strategy, but it's one that I think he'll probably mix it up quite a bit more. Like if I were Pete Carroll, what I would do is I would start throwing. And the tough part is this isn't Pete Carroll's style. Pete Carroll's style is not a like exotic disguisey defense. I know it's a little different now with the defensive coordinator that y'all have, and you're playing some more like too high stuff and some of the Fangio gap and a half stuff. But I still think that you've got to mix up the pre-snap picture with the post-snap rotation and make him think and make him freeze and make him do something. And if I were Pete Carroll, that's what I would do. Now, I think, you know, Shanahan's going to prepare for that. And, you know, and you're probably, I mean, he's going to start emptying the clip a little bit with some of these Debo runs because Debo's healthy.
Right.
He's back. You've got Elijah Mitchell. You've got Christian McCaffrey, who is an absolute first down machine. The rate at which he gets first downs is astounding. This is how the Niners offense can be so productive and have the quarterback still only have like a 7 yard depth of target, is because you're hitting a 4 yard pass to Christian McCaffrey, and the burst that he's got, he's already got 2 yards before the linebacker's closed. And then he just squeaks through, gets the first down, and it's just wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat. It's tough. It's a tough offense to guard against, and it's wonderful to watch it work.
Well, I hope that at the very least, our players on defense, Quandre Diggs, can, if he has those opportunities for a turnover, like he did in the last game, he doesn't let it slip through his hands, because obviously that I felt like the game really turned on that particular moment. Like that would have given them a short field. It's always a struggle to score against that Niners defense, especially, you know, with the season Bosa's having, you know, the season Fred Warner, Hufanga. I there's just a lot of players on that defense that I know that Geno and the offense are going to have to worry about. But when this offense was rolling, especially early in the year, it seemed like we could put up about 26 points on just about anybody. If they're able to find that, that is one of the paths to victory that I could see coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for me to say that the defense, again, the defense has had games where they've given up a lot of points, most recently to the Raiders.
The Raiders!
Jared Stidham! Right? What did the Raiders do? The Raiders took a game plan from, not exactly the same game plan, but a game plan that Cliff Kingsbury ran a couple of times and tried to do again, but just like Cliff Kingsbury's team wasn't in it this year. But what you do is you try to get to the edges on San Francisco and you try to use their aggressiveness against them. You know their defensive line is going to be one gap penetrate up the field right away. So what do you try to do? You try to hit them with screens. You get to the edge. It's an extension of your run game, but you're just getting away from the clogged middle that is that defensive line and some of that really, really fast linebacking core.
Yeah.
And if you can pop one and if you can basically stay on schedule, then you're starting to you know, kind of build drives and get a little bit of momentum, right? That's what the Raiders tried to do. The other thing that they did was they started with an explosive right away and a trick play. And that's what Arizona did when they watched that Raiders tape. They're like, oh, an explosive on like play number three? Let's try that too. And so I do think that there are things to be had, but D'Amico Ryans is so good at adjusting that happens in the first half and then things get real tight in that second half.
Right.
And there was a story that Matt Barrows had in The Athletic where he talked about what the halftime process was for the 49ers. It was a great look. Shanahan let him go into the locker room and observe what happened at half. And what D'Amico Ryans does when he's going down from, or he's not in the press box, he's on the field, but he actually gets a readout from the staff that shows the concepts that have been used and the ones that have been most effective against the defense in the first half. And that helps him inform his adjustments for the second half. So that's part of the reason.
That seems something natural that teams should do, but
I know,
but maybe not all of them do.
Maybe not all of them do. And I agree. It should be something they do. And I don't know if teams do or don't do that at scale, but I know that D'Amico Ryans does. And I think that's one of the reasons what he's been able to adjust based off of kind of looking at the first half, I think analytically has been good. I mean, there was, you know, three or four games there where the Niners didn't allow a second half score. And so their adjustments at half and their ability to tighten up, I think is good. The job that D'Amico Ryans has done this year is probably going to get him a head coaching job somewhere and get the Niners two more third round picks. It's going to be wonderful.
Yeah. And look at you guys always with the, you know, looking ahead and planning for future draft picks. I can't complain about that too much because it's worked out well for us this year too, but
yeah,
he's Oscar of at He's Oscar at Better Rivals, not of at Better Rivals, because the Better Rivals podcast is just something I'm used to you being on. But how have things been for you? Have you at least stayed in the podcasting game a little bit to provide, you know, some insight into the Niners?
I've stayed close to the team because, I mean, I'm a fan and, right. and I will always stay close to the team. But I've done little things here and there podcast wise for, you know, like people that I've done stuff before. There's a radio station in Hawaii that I do spots for every now and again. I did that once or twice. There's one in D.C. that I did before the Commanders game. You know, stuff like this for longtime friends like you, I will always happily come back on and talk about. But and actually, I did one for the 49ers, too. That was fun. But outside of that, man, I've just been kind of enjoying the game as a fan again and not having to go through the grind of like talking about the game immediately afterwards and watching the game and watching the All-22 and then like doing a deep dive and building out an agenda and talking about it and doing a video. Like, it was a lot. And so that having a little bit of extra time, I think, has been good. I know my daughters appreciated it. So, you know, we can go play Chase and watch Frozen together, which has been wonderful.
Hey, there you go.
But it's been, I mean, it's still fun. And I still, you know, like talking about it and jumping on stuff like this. So it's good. I still stay moderately connected, but not with as much time commitment.
Well, Oscar, I am hoping for a fun game for the both of us this weekend because, you know, for me and maybe the team will even feel this way, too. To not have any expectations really in terms of pressure from the fans, in terms of pressure from the media, to end up going 9-8, getting a playoff spot, it kind of feels like anything that happens is fine here on out. And so maybe I'm hoping too that there isn't as much pressure on the team. Maybe there's a little bit more pressure on the Niners going into this game, keeps it close, and hey, we see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited for a fun game too. By fun, I mean, you know, clearing the spread, not having to worry about this game, like, you know, being like, hey, man, there's only one game on right now. Are you sure we can't change the channel in the third quarter here? This is great.
10-point spread. That's a big spread, but it was also a big spread in week two. And we ended up, not being able to clear at that time either.
I will say this. There are Niners fans out there. I know them. I talk to them. They're friends of mine that are not excited about the Seahawks matchup just because of the history. We're scarred by the history of what happens against the Seahawks. But I do think this is a healthy team. It's the healthiest this team has been maybe all year, save for the quarterback, which is its own thing. But it's a talented team. It's a well-coached team. It's a team that earned the number two seed in the NFC. And so I think that it should be a fun game, but I do still think the Niners should take this game, especially at home.
Yeah, well, they should. But we will see what happens come Saturday. He's Oscar. Follow him at Better Rivals out on Twitter. And yeah, we're going to be talking throughout the week and probably after the game as well. So thanks once again, Oscar, for coming on. And go Hawks, man.
As usual, best of luck, unless it's against us.
Go Hawks!
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.